Fred, what have you done now?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the one and the only, the Brad Gilmore Show. Oh, and Dumand. How's everyone doing today? I hope you're having a great day. When we drop this, I guess it's Friday morning. So I am on my way driving somewhere in the great city of Houston, Texas. I wanted to shout out everyone who's, supported the, once again, another redo, a rebirth of the Brad Gilmore Show on Demand. I'm almost, this is like 3 or 4 weeks in a row. So, hey man, I'm trying my best. Before I get started today, I have a great guest on the show. His name is Mike the Truth Jackson, and he will be battling CM Punk at UFC. Is it 226? I believe it's 226. And it's going to be an interesting fight. You know, the only professional fight Mike the Truth Jackson has ever had was against Mickey Gall. The only professional fight CM Punk has ever had, well, was against Mickey Gall. So I'm going to be kind of interested to see how these two square up, because Mike Jackson didn't last as long as CM Punk did against his fight, Mickey Gall. He lost in, 45 seconds? But hey, it's something that happens. Now, neither here nor there. We're going to talk to Mike Jackson here in just one moment. The other thing I wanted to talk about, I just got back from the World Gym Arena. Booker T and I were working on our new studio for Heated Conversations. A lot of stuff going on with Heated Conversations, by the way. If you haven't subscribed, go to iTunes right now, type in Heated Conversations. A lot of stuff going on with Heated Conversations. I'm excited about it. So we're building a little studio at the World Gym Arena for it. And then we're doing a live stream of some of the sessions that he's been doing, these training sessions. And anyway, we did that, and then we were talking, and he dropped this nugget on me, which I guess am I breaking news? Breaking news right now. He told me he's going to be on Raw on Monday. Yeah, he's going to be on Monday Night Raw doing commentary, filling in for Jonathan Coachman. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if this is part of the superstar shakeup. I didn't really ask him. I don't know if Jonathan Coachman is taking a leave of absence. I have no idea. I don't know. Maybe he just can't. Maybe he's sick or something. I don't know what's going on. But Booker T will be on Monday Night Raw this Monday from St. Louis, Missouri. Home of Nelly. St. Louis, Missouri. So I thought that was a little interesting tidbit because, you know, Booker went away and I was like, oh man, that sucks. You know, I was looking forward to seeing Book, you know, on Monday Night Raw more. And then, you know, he went away and some people liked it. Some people didn't. I know his commentary is something that's an acquired taste, but I thought it was good. I thought it was different. I thought it was unique. I thought it was fun. Someone tweeted me the other day a great comment he made about Nakamura. He was like, you think Nakamura is ugly now? Just wait on it, you know? So anyway, we're going to get to this interview with Mike Jackson here, I guess right now. Check it out this Saturday. If you don't already know, we'll be doing our first live pay-per-view on Fight TV. Booker T is not heated conversation, Reality of Wrestling. We'll be doing our first live show. And it's called The Last Stand. It features a match called the 20-Man Last Stand, which is similar to that of the Royal Rumble. And NXT's Marcellus Black, or NXT's Brennan Williams, he wrestled at Reality Wrestling as Marcellus Black. He's coming back, and he's going to enter the Rumble. And this is what's interesting is if Marcellus Black wins, what does that mean? He's still signed to WWE, so does he stay in Reality Wrestling? Does he challenge for the Reality Wrestling Championship potentially and win it and then be a WWE contracted wrestler, be the, you know, Reality Wrestling Champion? It can happen. I don't know. I don't know who's going to win, but we're going to find out this Saturday. I'll be calling the action live with my broadcast partner, Matt Topolsky. And so it should be fun, guys. So, hey, I talked long enough. Make sure you follow me on all social media, at Brad Gilmore. Check out the Schmodown Rundown. that I host over there on the Collider Podcast Network on Podcast One. Go check that out if you haven't already. If you liked the Schmodown, you like movies, you like me, you like Frank, we have a good time over there. But let's get to it right now. Let's get to my interview with the one and the only, the man who's going to fight CM Punk at UFC 225 in Chicago, Illinois. Y'all make some noise for the truth, Mike Jackson. Mike Jackson joins me on the phone right now. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Hey, I'm good, man. How you feeling? Are you in H-Town right now?
I am. For another day, and I head out tomorrow. Get back to the Truth Tour. I head out to Austin tomorrow, and then I'll be in San Antonio for the rest of the weekend, and back home like Monday or Tuesday.
Tell the people, what's the Truth Tour all about?
Man, so for me, this is basically my job, man. For me, I get to travel around and work events, work, you know, either fights or, you know, these jiu-jitsu super fights, you know. So for me, like, this is my life, you know, my life revolves around fighting. So yeah, that's the tour, man. Like, I'm all over the place. I'll be in San Antonio this weekend. I'll be out in the spot.
Yeah, man. Well, hey, that's what you got to do. You got to be on the road. You got to be making it happen for yourself. And that's something that you've always kind of done in your career. You've always made it happen for yourself. You haven't waited on an opportunity. Where does that come from?
You know, I've just always had a hustler's mentality. You know, I come from it's probably what my parents instilled for me. You know, I come from a, you know, background where my father was a doctor. But he also, you know, he dabbled in the real estate and all kinds of, you know, buying and selling of goods. And so he instilled in me at a very young age, just that business mindset. I mean, I was trading stocks at 9 years old, you know.
How does that work? You're like, Coke, or what are you?
No, wasn't selling Coke. I was selling stocks.
No, I'm saying sell on Coca-Cola is what I meant.
Oh, actually, you know, I see what you're saying. Yeah. No, even at one of my first stocks I had, I was a shareholder in Walmart.
Really?
At 9 years old. Yeah, you know, and it was really just, you know, my father, you know, teaching me different things, you know, at a very young age. For me, I just happened to be a numbers guy. I'm a very smart person. So I was able to sort of pick up on it, you know, very quickly. And then I feel that was what the foundation was laid. And then, you know, as just I've grown up, you know, for me, I can't just my personality and the type just who I am. Like, I can't work a corporate job because there are a lot of idiots in the world.
That's true.
And so, you know, and so for me to save myself the heartache and just. Look, I have friends who work in corporate America, and I hear the stories that they tell and how miserable they are. It's like, I've never wanted that for myself, you know? And so I, just growing up, I've always been able to create these different opportunities for myself. And this is just another one of those opportunities, or as far as like the fighting world goes, this was just an opportunity that I created for myself. And, you know, I couldn't have imagined that I would be at the point that I am right now in my life. But I'm here and I'm enjoying the ride.
No, absolutely. And that's what I love about it. And I think part of it must be a Houstonian's mentality. There's something about Houston that we're just like, we're go-getters. We just go out there and do it. If you look at, you know, the Slim Thugs of the world or the ESGs, they just went out and they made it happen, selling it out of the trunk of their car. It's a part of the culture here in Houston. But that's crazy. So you're selling stocks. Your dad's a doctor. You know, what drew you to MMA?
I just always been into fighting, man. You know, as a young kid, I was a fan of professional wrestling and boxing.
Yeah.
And then
Who are your favorite wrestlers when you were a kid?
Favorite wrestler of all time is The Rock.
Oh,
all
absolutely.
Time.
Okay.
I'm kind of getting back into it now. I'm a fan of Asuka. I like her style. I like what she's doing. But yeah, you know, so I was a fan of pro wrestling and boxing. And then in my late teens, I was introduced into MMA. And then once I was in college, I was just a fan. You know, I tell my mother, I was like, it's your fault I'm fighting because you never let me do karate as a kid. you know, I compete, you know, that's the thing. Like, I was always an athlete. You know, my first sport I played was baseball. I did basketball, tennis, swimming, football. You know, I did all these different sports, but I always had this sort of, Just something about fighting I was just drawn to. And, you know, the opportunity rose, you know, in my early 20s. And I've been in this ever since. I've been to April 1st of this, April 1st of 2018 would make a decade I've been in MMA.
Wow, that long already. And so, okay, so you're kind of like me. I'm a wrestling fan, and then I see this show called The Ultimate Fighter one day, and I'm like, what the hell is this? And I had heard of Ultimate Fighting before, but I'd never seen it. And then I see guys like, you know, Forrest Griffin or Stephen Bonner on that inaugural season with Chuck Liddell. Who were some of the guys who drew you in?
Man, you know, as far as a sport, I just enjoy fighting. You know, I've never been someone who gravitated toward individual sort of athletes, with the exception of baseball or basketball. You know, I have my favorite ball players, but for me, it's really just the love of the sport. You know, so for me, I just love fighting. It really didn't. Well, obviously, you have to be. You know, you need to capture my attention. You need to be good at something one way or the other. But again, I just like fighting, man, and that's what caught my attention. And then come to find out, like, some of the people on the show, like, I've met them, or, you know, even Sam Hoger. At one point, we were. I mean, I don't want to say we were friends, but, you know, we were acquaintances. Now he's just a terrible person. But yeah, I always like to drop Sam Hoger's name sometimes. But yeah, man, it was just one of those things that caught my attention, and man, it's just a great thing.
Well, you know, I know you got kind of your start, you know, here in the Houston area, you know, a legacy, which is always a big deal here in Texas. You got to see probably some of the guys on their way up, like the Sage Northcutts of the world. I'm sure you got to see them fighting legacy.
Dude, that's the crazy thing. Is like a lot of guys that you're seeing in the UFC right now at the top level. You know, I was there from, you know, the early days. Like I remember I was at Sage Northcutts. I remember when I first met him. We're at a Hooters in Humble, and it was the weigh-ins for I don't know if it was called, well, it was Legacy by that time. Cause before that, it was called Lone Star Beatdown. Anyway, I'm at the Hooters at the weigh-ins, and Sam Hoger walks up to me. He's like, Mike Jackson, I got the next big thing right here. He's going to be, and he's like hyping him up. And I'm just like, who are you talking about? He points, it's Sage Northcutts. You need to know this name. And now I will give him that, because Sam Hoger is one of the biggest liars I've ever met in my life. But when he told me Sage Northcutts was going to be a superstar, that's probably the most honest thing Sam Hoger has ever said in his life. And he was true about that. And as we see, Sage Northcutts is on a whole different level. You know, I was there at Derek Lewis. You know, he and I have been close personal friends for quite a while. Now, I wasn't at his amateur fights, but, you know, his early pro fights, like first or second pro fights, I was there. Actually, I missed it. I wanted, because he fought a guy named Nick Mitchell. You remember Nick Mitchell?
Yeah, I remember Nick. Yeah.
I didn't get to see that. I saw the video. I wasn't at the – something happened. I couldn't go to it. But I did see video. But then after that, I've been in just about all of Derek Lewis's fights. Outside of the – he had one, I want to say, in Colorado I didn't get to go to. But for the most part, man, I've been there at all his fights pre-UFC. I mean, they're in against several other guys. Justin Liddell, I've been there from day one. Rashad Coulter, who's in the UFC now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. Holly Holm, I was there, you know. I've seen a lot of great talent come up through the years, and it's just been an honor, man, just to know these guys and to see, you know, to see them display their art on the grand stage.
No, and I think that's what's cool to see guys like Sage. I remember seeing Sage at Legacy and seeing him now on the UFC. Oh, the trajectory that guy has gone on is incredible. But, you know, let's get back to you. So you're covering, though, a lot of these events. You're doing some videography. You're doing some journalism. I remember we had you on the show, Booker and I show back. It must have been 2 years ago almost.
It was hyping up the Mickey Gall fight.
The fight with you and Mickey Gall. So I remember, you know, we covered you would cover a lot of these events. You know, so what was it that clicked in your head, though, that was like, okay, you know, that's all well and good, you know, covering it. I love the sport. I love going out and looking at it. But, you know, what was that trigger that was like, okay, I want to start training? When did you start training?
Oh, no. Well, the training, the fighting came first. The
fighting
the covering
came first.
Came second.
Okay, so you started training, and then, but, you know, so it was a lot of amateur fights, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I was an amateur for quite a while. And for me, it was one of those things where I just enjoyed fighting. That was it. Like,
yeah.
I never.
You just like to get around there and scrap a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I never had aspirations to be a world champion or anything like that. Because again, you know, it takes a special kind of person to kind of dedicate that time and dedicate their life. Look, for me, I just enjoy, I'm all about just enjoying life, you know. And I fought, you know, a very, very, you know, I fought a lot as an amateur. And then one day I was just like, man, I just want to get paid for this. You know, I was tired of fighting for free. And that was what, and I started off with amateur boxing and did that for a while, did some kickboxing. And then again, you know, I got that call from MMA from Uncle Damon, gave me that call. And so I was like, man, I made my pro MMA debut in the UFC. I was like, come on, like, how often does this happen? So that's how we got here.
Yeah, I mean, it probably happens next to never. Just, you know, you're one of those lucky few. And your opponent that you have coming up, who we're about to talk about here in a second. But let's go back to that Mickey Gall fight. The Mickey Gall fight obviously didn't go the way that you wanted it to do. But going back and looking at it, I remember talking about it. And I think it was still kind of a crazy stipulation. Now, Mickey Gall, a friend of the show, love Mickey. But, you know, if Mickey won, he'd get the shot at CM Punk. But if you won, you'd just win a fight, right? Wasn't that the stipulation going in?
Correct.
I don't understand that logic. I mean, I know you were kind of like, hey, whoever wins should get the fight. Looking back at it now, almost 2 years, did you still understand that? Do you understand why they did that?
I don't, but again, that's just cause I don't understand that business side of it. You know, again, for the most part, I understand how a lot of these things work, but for that one, I feel it was just probably situational. I think that if I would have won, they would have changed, to be honest with you. It's just the way the storyline was written. You know, to be honest with you, I'm telling people, I don't think Vince McMahon couldn't have written a better storyline for this real life scenario here. You know, for a real life fight, there couldn't have been, you know, you really couldn't have me go in there and fight CM Punk first. Right? It wouldn't make sense from a business standpoint. And so, and not to say that, you know, I gave the fight away. Look, I zigged when I should have zagged. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, Mickey was the better man and he did what he had to do. But again, even with that, the way it played out is like the UFC couldn't have asked for anything better. Because you get this fight, you got the hot prospect. I'll put him over in Mickey Gall. Now he's going to be a future champion. And so I put him over, gets him the Punk fight. He goes out there, and he did exactly what I was telling people he was going to do. I was like, look, man, Gall's not – he because for him, he had way much more at stake than any of the three of us.
Yeah.
You know, for Punk, it's just him kind of doing something for a bucket list. For me, it's just I love fighting and I'm trying to elevate my brand. For Gall, this is his future. This is something that he just like my thing is just to kind of entertain people. His goal is to be a UFC champion. You know, so for him, he had the most out of all of us to lose here. You know, so he did what he had to do. He went in like good. Punk threw this. He threw a jab and then. It really was just Punk is too – he didn't have the reaction time to prepare for that double.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's really what happened, you know. And he got taken down. And again, Mickey did what he was supposed to do. And from Punk's standpoint, you have to look at like, man, I got choked out, but, you know, I really didn't get hurt or anything. Like, he didn't get knocked out. He didn't get – I mean, he took some punches to the face. But, I mean – that's a fight, you know?
I mean, that's going to happen. You're going to get hit.
You're going to get hit, you know? It's a fight. So for him, like, that was the best case scenario for him because it's like, all right, well, I lost, but I didn't take damage in the fight. Well, let's try this again. I think I can do well. Give me another chance, you know? And he generated so much money that Dana had no choice. He was like, you know what? I get it. This is just a dumb decision. Or not, I should say dumb. But it's a silly decision to have CM Punk fighting in the UFC, but he brings in so much money that it kind of justifies the move. You understand?
Yeah.
And so that's why we're here. But for me, I'm not going in there to submit him, man. And to clear things up, like I have no animosity or ill will towards Phil. Again, I'm just going in there to beat him up. Look, he wanted to get in a fist fight. You know, and so I'm just a guy that's going to give it to him. And you know, I'm going to touch him again. Not going to hurt him. I don't want to hurt him. I just want to show him that there's levels to this game and that he's just not ready for this one.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think CM Punk, I mean, do you think him, obviously the interest was in his first fight, obviously, and there's a tremendous interest in his second fight, but do you think he would have been much better starting off in the amateur ranks and then trying to learn the game? Or do you think that he was just...
That's the thing is like that, but see, again, you have to, yeah, it depends on how you look at it. So if I'm looking at it from, let's just look at it from Phil's perspective, look at it from CM's perspective. It's like, look, I'm not trying to be champion. I just want to do this. I just want to try it. And when you have a public figure like a Phil Brooks, and he has this huge fan base, right? He has all, I mean, he can look, they paid him $500,000.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So when you have this value on your name, you can't go fight as an amateur for free. You just can't do that because now you're devaluing yourself. Again, this is from the perspective of a Phil Brooks. On the opposite side, like from where I'm coming from, is you should have went the amateur route. You should have went that route to build yourself up. But the difference is that route goes to those who want longevity in the sport, like a Greg Hardy. You know, I know Greg Hardy, the former Dallas Cowboy football player, former Pro Bowler. He decided he wanted to try MMA out, but for Greg Hardy, he has aspirations of being in the UFC. He has aspirations of being a world champion. So he went about it the correct way. Those aren't the same goals for Phil Brooks. So I don't knock his hustle. He did from his perspective, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. Period. Because you can't really go any other place. You can't go to World Series. You can't go to Bellator because these types of people, they don't have the money. They can't afford your value. And I get big Bellator. They put on these crazy shows and they have the production and you know I get
got
it.
More I've of a pro wrestling vibe. Bellator
they do.
Does. Yeah,
they do. But the issue with that is that it's Bellator.
Yeah.
It's shown on Paramount. What? Like, what are you talking about? They can pay him money. They can pay him good money, but they're not going to meet it. I guarantee you Bellator couldn't afford to pay Phil Brooks $500,000 for one fight. I guarantee you because you have to look at the return on your investment. You understand? And the only structure that makes sense for a CM Punk fight will be a pay-per-view structure. That's it, you know? And that's the issue is like a lot of people who and I've seen on the internet he should have went this that he should have did this or did that. It's like y'all are saying this because you don't understand how the game works. If you understood how the game works, you wouldn't be saying nothing right now. You'd be like, all right, let him do his thing. And that's the other thing is like people are so they're so emotionally and I get the emotional investment in the things, but it's like y'all are invested in the wrong ways. It's like why are you upset that this guy? This former pro wrestler, he figured he wants to try this sport out. It's not like he's making a mockery of the sport. He loves the sport. He wants to compete in it. So what's so wrong about it? Just because it happens to be in the UFC? Why? I mean, I get now. If he would have went the amateur route, if he would have fought for like a legacy amateur, the LFA amateur series or something like that, it would have drawn buzz, obviously, all of that. But he wouldn't have got paid anything. He would have been fighting for free.
Yeah.
Why fight for free? And again, why even go that route if I don't want to be a champion? I just want to fight. So if I'm going to go out and fight, then I want to maximize my money. And that's what he did. And that's why we're here.
And, you know, I mean, and he just looked, hey, man, this is what Brock did. Brock did this. He walked right into the UFC. I mean, I know Brock had a fight before. And Brock had different goals. And Brock was younger. And Brock probably had an amateur background as well. So there are a lot of differences there, but I'm thinking correct. if you're CM Punk and you're like, I'm trying to go into UFC from WWE, look at the guys who've done it before me. Brock made a lot of money. Let me just go straight there and showcase it. And you know, let's be honest, there was interest in seeing CM Punk fight for the very first time and seeing him do it on a big stage, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you say Uncle Dana is what you said. He said he gave you the call about the Mickey Gall fight. When you heard CM Punk, there were rumors going around, okay, hey, Punk might fight in Chicago, UFC coming up here, you know, a couple months in June. You know, did you think, oh, hey, this might be an opportunity for me? Or did you just think, oh, wow, let's see if this actually happens and I wonder who they're going to get for him?
No, this was my fight from day one. You know, I knew what it was. Again, I know how the game works, and this is one of those things is where I'm not even like that type of person. Like, I don't really believe in karma and luck and all that stuff. I think things just happen because they happen. But for me, this was one of those situations where I felt that I was sort of made for this opportunity. Like, this opportunity was written for me, and this is just kind of like my big break in life. You know, everyone goes about different, you know, everyone does things different ways in life. You know, you zig when you shoot a zag. And for me, this was just it was just a perfect opportunity, you know. And look, this whole thing, everything that has happened to me has literally fell in my lap. And this is just another one of those those perfect opportunities that literally fell in my lap, you know. And so I just have to make the best of it and capitalize on the opportunity.
So you're fighting there. You find CM Punk. You've seen what he has to do. I mean, y'all both have had one fight. You fought the same guy. So obviously you can see, you know how Mickey Gall fights. But what did you learn about CM Punk's fighting style from that Mickey Gall fight? You had 2 minutes and 14 seconds you can look at.
I didn't learn anything.
You didn't learn anything. So that's my point. How are you preparing for CM Punk? I mean, are you going to go in there and just say, look, I've been doing this all my life. I've been watching the sport all my life. I know I can beat this guy. I'm younger than him. I'm faster than him. I'm probably stronger than he is. I mean, are you just going to go out there and just outperform him, or do you have a specific strategy without giving too much away?
No, man, for me, the way I look at it is you take a guy that, I've been in the sport for a decade. So I've been fortunate enough to see all aspects from the lowest of the, from the bummiest of bums. I'm talking about people. I'm talking about people who literally have no business fighting.
Talk about it. Yeah.
I've seen those people, and I've also seen world champions. So I've seen it everywhere in between. And so for me, I have an idea of someone who is pushing 40. He has a lot of wear and tear on his body I don't really know how that – I haven't seen that, but I understand – what professional wrestlers
he's got a lot of wear and tear. He definitely
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He has a wear and tear on his body. He's older. He's not as slow as me. He doesn't have the fast twitch muscles that I have. He doesn't have the reaction speed that I have. All of these things play a factor into what he's able to do. Look, I get he's a blue belt on the ground. Look, if I would have stayed training jiu-jitsu consistently, I would at the very least be a brown belt right now. I feel that I'm a solid blue belt, you know, I'm a solid blue belt without even really training in jiu-jitsu, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
That's just how comfortable I am at that level. He's just very limited. And again, this isn't a knock on Phil, you know, I'm not trying to disparage him at all, but it's just, these are facts. These are literal facts that I'm saying here right now. You know, and so with that being said, I understand what he possibly is going to bring to the table. And it's just, even with that, I can't see him beating me.
It's just, you know, I mean, there's a lot there for Punk. And yeah, there's a lot of, I think, factors that weigh on your side more than his. Do you see there being any, do you see him being able to surprise you at all?
I'm sure. Sure. Anything is possible. Anything can happen. You know, people, they're judging Phil off of his performance. But the thing is, we didn't see anything. So we don't even know what his abilities were up until the Mickey Gall fight. We have no idea. So you have this unknown. We don't really know where that. So add into that, take the unknown, then add a year and a half of time that has passed. Now, granted, he had back surgery, he took some time off. So let's give him a year. And I don't know how back surgeries work. I thought they were real severe. I thought for a back surgery, you're taking way more time off than what he took off. But whatever. So you have the unknown of his abilities prior to the golf fight. Then you have, a year and a half of time of training. So you have to say he's gotten better. Now, we just don't know how much better he's gotten because we never knew where he began. You know, so it's just one of those intangibles. So, yeah, he could – look, he could be a Dennis Seaver. He'd come out here and open up with a spinning back kick. I have no idea.
Yeah, well, I'd like to take the under on that bet right there. But, you know, I get you. I get what you're saying, though. Anything can
now
happen.
Now watch. This motherfucker, he'll come out and throw a spinning back kick just for you. And I'm going look, and I'm a step back and shake my head. I'm like, man, this motherfucker can't have a spinning back kick.
You know, hey, have you spoke to CM Punk at all? Have y'all talked prior to this? Have you ever spoke to him?
I'll tell you how this started. So after the golf fight, I'm in the back and I'm in the tent getting checked out by the doctors and they're giving me my check. So I look outside the tent and it's Phil and AJ Lee standing at like, they're probably like 15, 20 yards away. And at first thing I was like, man, AJ Lee is fine as hell. That was the first thing I thought.
I feel you.
And then the second thing was like, why are they just awkwardly standing over in the distance? So I'm walking out of the tent. And so they approached me and it was just real awkward. He was like, well, good job. You know, it was like, he didn't know what to say to me, but it was one of those situations like, you literally didn't have to come speak to me. You could have now, if you want to just come and dab me up or shake my hand. Hey man, you know, good job, whatever. Good try, whatever. Yeah. That's cool. But it was just, it's like when he walked over, yeah. Right. You know, and I would have been cool with that. But when he walked over, it was just like, he didn't know what to say. And so if you don't know what to say, why walk over? Right.
Yeah.
So that was our only interaction with one another. And then, and even with that, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. In the moment, I was just like, man, why did this dude even, you know, come do all that? But then building up the golf fight, I guess he was like, he was doing these interviews or whatever. And on somebody's show, this guy had the audacity to call me a can. And my thing is like, look, you've never fought before. How can you call someone a can when you have never fought? You know, for me, it is now. Look, you can be 0-100. Now, are you a can? Probably are. But if you're literally have never fought, you don't have the right to call that person a can because you've never fought. So who's to say you wouldn't start fighting? You wouldn't be 0-100, you know?
Yeah.
And that's my logic behind it is that. Now, look, let's say that I am a can. That's cool. I'm a can. But you've never fought. So who are you to call me a can? I made my pro debut in the UFC against a legit fighter in Mickey Gall. Again, I feel that Mickey Gall has the potential to be a future world champion. You know, and at the time, he's a legit brown belt under the Miller brothers. The kid is good, you know?
Young 20s, got his whole career ahead of him. Yeah.
Right. And so when you have someone, again, I come from my pro combat sports experience. I'm not even talking about my amateur MMA experience. Just my professional career. I'm 4-0 in boxing, all four wins coming via knockout, and I'm 1-0 in kickboxing with that win coming via knockout. So I have five fights, five professional striking matches. All five of those fights ended with me knocking someone out. How am I a can? So if that makes me a can, what does that make you feel, Brooks?
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's, and again, I didn't take it personally. The reason why I felt sort of disrespected in the fighting, I felt disrespected as a fighter. And we're in this fighting industry. And so, I mean, look, if anybody, it don't matter who you are, you get on social media, if you're a fighter, you start running your mouth. And then if we can make a fight happen, and if it's a quality fight, then let's make it happen. You know, it's not like if Tyron Woodley would, man, you can't, you suck. That. I'm like, well, you're the world champion. I guess compared to you, I do. You know, yeah. And I was just like, I'd have took that L. I'm like, well, shit, Tyron Woodley called me a can. All right, we out of here. And that would have been it. But if you somebody who you're saying you want to fight, you have no fights, and you call someone a can, and we just happen to be in the same weight class, well, then we gonna fight, and that's why we're here.
I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see it. Now, I want to ask you a couple more things before I let you go. You talk about you're in the same weight class. Is 170, is that an easy weight for you to get to, or what's your walk-around weight?
No. That's easy money. For me to make 170, it's really just diet. So that's my biggest thing. For me, people don't know, like, I love to eat. I'm a foodie. I have a show.
We live in Houston. We got to go to Papa Do's. We got to have barbecue. We're going to be eating.
Papa Do's so long. But for me, people who follow me on social media, of course, you can follow me at The Truth Jackson on all my social media. I do something called the Truth Food Tour. And so, again, because I travel so much, I get to go to all these lovely and beautiful cities, and I get to try all these different types of cuisines. And so, for me, I just love to eat. I did fight at 155 at one time, but for me to make 155, like, that's a legit cut. Like, I have to prepare like 6 to 8 weeks out my diet, and I had to stay strict to make 55. For me to fight back at that weight, it would have to be a perfect opportunity, like me fighting Artem Lobov, which he verbally agreed to it after the golf fight. He was like, "Yeah, I'll fight you," and then, you know, the UFC released me or whatever. But that would be the one fight as far as current UFC fighters. That would be the one fight that I want. He agreed to it. I agreed to it. But again, after him helping his boy throw dollies through buses, we don't even know if he's still employed by
UFC. That might be a big question mark on that one right now.
Yeah. So who knows? But for me, 170 is really just about diet and exercise. I don't even know what I am right now. I mean, last time I checked last week, I was like 185. But even when I saw the 185, I hadn't even really started training hard. I mean, I'm training. I work out a few times, you know, several times a week or whatever, you know, 3, 4, 5, whatever, depending on what my schedule allows. But I'm never just like out of shape. Like, you'll never see me like just completely out of shape. For me, it may take me like a week or two to get back in fight shape. But after I'm back in fight shape, then I'm good.
How do you see this fight ending? With CM Punk.
Second round knockout.
That's what you're calling
second round knockout.
Well, that's the truth. And that's the truth right there. So who am I to call you out and say you're a liar? You're telling the truth right now. Second round knockout. I think I see it happening. I'm excited for it. Now, the fight's in June, right? It's June.
June 9th, UFC 225 in Chicago at the United Center.
Now, are you gonna feel a little weird? It's not a hometown crowd for you. It's a hometown crowd for him. Crowd might be against you a little bit.
Man, I thrive off that, actually, to be honest with you. Like, I love being the heel, and I'm going to make the bet. Now, see, let me rephrase. I'm more like the anti-hero. I like the Stone Cold route. Like, I don't want to be a complete heel. Like, I don't want to just come out, like, just trashing everybody, trashing the city of Chicago. But, you know, for me, it's more like the anti-hero. And I feel, and I didn't even realize this until, like, a couple of days ago, that I was under the impression that although he's from Chicago, he doesn't really have a lot of like hometown support or whatever. That's what I was told maybe, I don't know, a year ago or less than that. Again, I didn't really follow. By the time he kind of broke out as a big star in the WWE, I had already kind of shifted away. I do remember him from the ECW days, though.
Yeah.
But as far as the WWE, I had already, you know, gravitated from professional wrestling. So I really didn't know. I didn't know what type of hometown love he would get. Well, apparently I was completely wrong. And this dude is going to get the biggest pop of the night, apparently. So with that said, I have no idea what that's going to feel like. You know, I want to say it was like 2008, 2009. I fought on a car with Dustin Poirier in Louisiana, and I ended up fighting like one of his teammates. And now, you know, he's obviously going to have a big crowd. He's going to have the support, but it's different. Like, this was a stadium it held about 10,000 people. But it was like it was a regional car. You know, you had all these names on the car. Not everyone's going to be there for this guy that I'm fighting. So it's different. I'm going to be fighting not just in this guy's hometown. Like, this dude is a superstar as far as like his brand goes. And I can't prepare for that because I've never been in that situation. I can ask people, "Hey man, what is it going to feel like?" And they can give it for me from their perspective, but I won't know, you know? But for me, I thrive off that. I'm going to enjoy it. And trust me, I'm bringing some heat. I know I'm going to get some heat. I know I'm going to get some boos, but I thrive off that, man. And so I think it's going to be a great experience. And I feel we're going to elevate the brand and we're going to pick up a bunch of fans out in Chicago.
No, hey, I feel you then, man. You got to go out there. You got to go out there and do it for Houston, Texas.
Yeah, you got to already, baby.
You got to already. Yeah, I appreciate you coming off the show, Mike. Let people know where they can follow you and tell them if they're out there in San Antonio or wherever, where they can check you out on the Truth Tour.
Man, you know, you can catch me at all my social media is at The Truth Jackson, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat. For me, it's not all about fighting. You know, I'm a professional photographer. I'm a published photographer. I get to travel around the country and do these things. So for me, you get a sort of inside look at my life and what I like to do. And you get the dope shots, you, whether it be jiu-jitsu or MMA or boxing or food. Or I cover burlesque shows. I love women, you know. So
ain't nothing wrong with that, brother.
Yeah. You know, so you get all of this a variety of content for me, you know. But yeah, and then of course my podcast, The Truth About Stuff podcast, is you can find that on iTunes, Stitcher, and then of course, you know, MikeTheTruth.com/podcast. Subscribe to that, check it out, and enjoy the ride, man.
You're all over the place, brother. Man, you gotta come down to Texas City sometime. Check out Booker and I's wrestling show. That's what you gotta do.
Man, I was at one of my coaches, we did a Muay Thai show there. A few years back.
Yeah, I remember that show. I wasn't there, but I remember the show. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I would love to come out there, you know, and do some work, you know.
Yeah,
and
man, just come hang out. You're our special invited guest for our next show. I'll text you the info. Front row seat.
Please do,
Yeah, please, come on out.
Yo, I'm with that. Please, man, I appreciate it, man. But thanks for the time.
No, I appreciate you. And second round knockout is going to be CM Punk's last fight. That's in Chicago against Mike the Truth Jackson, holding it down for H-Town. Mike, appreciate you, man.
No doubt. David, thank you.